When I was a kid, one of my favorite shows was Rawhide. This sort of ages dates me here. Any of you remember Rawhide? Thank you so much, Wallace. Yes, I heard that. I loved Rowdy Yates. Man, that was the king of cool. Anyway, these cowboys were taking the herd from Texas up to Kansas, and they had all kinds of trouble that they had to overcome. But one of the images I will never forget out of that show was that sometimes the bad guys, I don't remember how they did it, but they ended up running into quicksand. You have some images of that? And there they are, up about waist deep in quicksand, and they realize they're caught, and the more they try to get out of the quicksand, the lower they sink down. And you can see this look on their face of horror and terror. And finally, I have an image in my mind of these guys with their chin up as high as they can go, straining to keep their mouth above that. And then finally, even their mouth goes beneath. And then all you can see is their hands waving like this for a short time. And then all you see is the cowboy hat. That is a picture that should be in our minds of what happens to people when we neglect what we're going to talk about today. A concept that is important in both the Old Testament and the New Testament, it's called the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord is simply this, in its simplest sense, is that there are boundaries in life that God has made. And you can think of these boundaries as sort of the stage. And that as long as you live within the boundaries, on the stage, then there is freedom. Doesn't mean that life is easy, necessarily, but if you persist in going beyond these boundaries, because you just have to have what's on the other side of that boundary, it just makes so much sense to you. You are in the process of walking into the same type of muck and mire that some of the bad guys in Rawhide walked into themselves. Now, a lot of times people think of the fear of the Lord as a negative concept. You know, of God standing up in heaven with a sledgehammer, looking for anybody having fun, ready to squash that out of them. That is not what fear of the Lord means. Fear of the Lord is a positive attribute of God. The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life, turning a man from the snares of death. King Solomon was a man who had everything that was possible to have, and through the course of his life, he set out to figure out, how does life really work? What approach, what attitude toward life should one take if you're going to experience what God wants us to experience? He tried all kinds of things, and he ran himself into all kinds of cul-de-sacs. He ran himself into several quicksand pits through the course of his life. But when he got done, here was his conclusion. It's in Ecclesiastes 12, the last two verses. Let's go on. There you go. He says, "The end of the matter, all has been heard." Here's a summary. "Fear God and keep his commands, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, whether good or evil." For God will bring every deed into judgment, every hidden thing, whether good or evil. In other words, what he's saying is that we live in a world where there are boundaries. If you live up here, that's a good thing. You're wise to do that. But if you persist in going down here, you can be sure that God is big enough and loves you enough that if you play near the quicksand pits, he's going to do something about it in your life, even if you don't want him to. And it's not just the big things that we think about, but here, what Solomon says is every hidden thing. Those things that you say to yourself, well, nobody will know about this, or this won't hurt anybody, even those things are going to come under inspection. He's going to be trying to move you back up into within his boundaries. Now, if you watch television, that is not the message you're getting on weeknight television. The message you're getting on weeknight television is something like this. We live in a hard world and it's tough, but if you see something that's just beyond the boundaries, that's okay. It may not be the best thing, but the consequences aren't really going to be that bad. Somehow by the end of the hour or by the end of the 30 minutes, it's going to be okay. Newsflash. That's not how life works. However, if you get a steady diet of that kind of TV, and suddenly you walk across the boundaries, and trouble and dishonor comes to you, suddenly we're surprised. Whereas this attitude says, that should not be a surprise at all. That's something you should expect. When we violate God's boundaries, we bring trouble upon ourselves and dishonor. Now, some people think, well, isn't the fear of the Lord just an Old Testament concept? No, it's both Old Testament and New Testament. For example, in the book of Acts, then the church throughout Judea, Galilee, and Samaria enjoyed a time of peace. It was strengthened and encouraged by the Holy Spirit. It grew in numbers, living in the fear of the Lord. All right, what is the fear of the Lord? Deuteronomy 10, verse 12 is a great verse on this. And now, O Israel, what does the Lord your God ask of you but to fear the Lord? And then he breaks this down into components. What are the specifics? Some of the specifics of this. He says to walk in all his ways. The idea is simply that there is a framework to life, and you're wise if you walk within that framework. And you are foolish if you think you can walk outside that framework and be unscathed. The second thing, to walk in all his ways, to love him. Now, it's a very easy thing to tell anybody in your life that I love you. But the proof is always in the tasting. If I say to my wife, I love her, but in my home, if I decide I'm not going to wash any more dishes and I'm not going to do any laundry, she's going to have questions about whether I love her or not. Her love language is serving. The quickest way for her feeling love in our house is for me to get off my can and do something for her. And for me, it's being Larry the laundry loser, Danny the dish dude, Tom the trash tyke. All of those things tell my wife I love her. Now, in the same way here, we can say, God, I love you. But it's just words unless we put his interests in front of ours, his desires in front of ours. To love him and to serve the Lord with all your heart and soul. Now, in our particular country, in America, we have two values as Americans. Personal peace and affluence. Okay, I'll serve the Lord as long as it doesn't cost too much. I'll serve the Lord as long as it's convenient. If I can find a little time, I'll sort of sprinkle it out over there. But that's not what he says here. Serve the Lord with all your heart and your soul. And then he says, and observe the Lord's commands and decrees I am giving you today. Why? For your own good. Now, you may not follow the boundaries because it pleases God. Or because out of gratitude for what God has done for you, you want to do that. Or because it will keep you from bringing harm and hurt to other people. Okay. The lowest common denominator, he said, is good enough. If for no other reason, do this for your own self-centered, selfish good. You don't want to violate this one. Psalm 119:120 says, my flesh trembles in fear of you. I stand in awe of your laws. The idea is not just that, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? What's God going to do to me? That's not what he says. Stand in awe of God. And in spite of everything that he's made, running the universe and galaxies and solar systems and planet Earth, running nations and countries, he's also interested in you. You are not too small for his care. And you may think he's got other bigger things to do other than look at whether you're going across boundaries or not. But if you think that, you underestimate him. He is a great God. The one that made the solar systems. And the one that made matter out of which everything is made. To where even a microscope is not enough to see. He knows you. And he loves you. And if you determine in your heart, there's just something outside those boundaries I just have to have, and what could be so wrong with having that? Even though you don't see the consequences coming, you don't see the trouble or turmoil that's coming, you don't see the dishonor, I guarantee you, He is going to, you are going, inviting significant pushback from him in your life. We call that stress. He's trying to get you up within the boundaries. Another aspect, way to think about the fear of the Lord is staying away from wrong. Psalm 34 says, "Come, my children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. Whoever of you loves life and desires to see many good days," here's his first application. "Keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking lies." In other words, if you say you're going to fear the Lord, stop saying nasty things about the people in your life. I can't say I'm walking in the fear of the Lord if my mouth is without a tether, running rampant. I'm always amazed being out in public. I'm always amazed at the things that come up into my head that are ready to come tumbling out of my mouth. It's very easy to demonize people. To think in your own head about the worst common denominator or the worst motivation about somebody. And then if we're around somebody, we talk about something they did. And then we join the multitudes in the chorus who utter the foolishness of, "I can't believe he did that. I would never do such a thing." He says, stop it. Now, one of the reasons why to stop it is because over time, if you allow that kind of pattern of talk to come tumbling out of your mouth over the years, you know, something's going to happen to you. You are going to sour. And you are going to become soured. You will see this in your marriage. You will see this raising teenagers. You will see this with people at work. You will see it with that group of people we call in-laws. When I was a kid, it seemed to me that there was something wrong with my tongue. I seemed to bite my tongue a whole lot more than I should when I was eating. I thought there's something strange going on there. But you know, in retrospect, as I think back about all those times I bit my tongue when I was eating, I really should have been more happy about that and taken that as a life lesson. This is something you should take on in your life, and you should do more often, biting your tongue. On the inside of your handout, Psalm 34, 14, "Turn from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it." Okay, the idea of boundaries, before we move on, boundaries. You may think, "I don't like boundaries. I want to go beyond the boundaries." You know, there's some boundaries I don't like either. I'm not a big proponent of stoplights. When I'm driving, stoplights are the enemy. And I'm not looking just at the next stoplight or the second stoplight. I have my eyes on at least the third stoplight. And for some odd reason, I think it's a game at which I must win to make it through all three stoplights without having to stop. If I have to stop at the stoplight, I have lost. Now, we're going to have a remedial group afterwards. We'll meet back in here. We'll talk about this, okay? Now, I may not like stoplights, but you know what I'm often reminded of when I don't like stoplights? Have any of you ever been on Culver Drive during the week between 5:30 and 6:30 when the stoplights go out? And the only thing left are those annoying blinking lights? Anybody been in that traffic? There have been times I've gotten off the 405 at Culver. We live at the first light off of the 405. And there have been times it's taken me 25 minutes to get home. I may not like boundaries, but I need them. When I was going on a mission trip to Chicago years ago, I was driving, there were four of us, and we were driving like something like 16 or 17 hours there. It was about 1 in the morning, and I was driving my friend's car out in the middle of nowhere in Illinois. I think it was in January, and it was cold, and there was snow on the road. The freeways did not have the cement dividers between them. But in that part of the country, they had a really wide median, and it was sort of this little grass valley kind of thing. And I was wondering, now, what a waste of space. Well, I guess they do this for safety purposes. Well, I was driving, and suddenly I found myself at the wheel asleep. The reason I found myself at the wheel of the sleep was that I had allowed the car to drift left into that area between the two roads, and there was about that much snow between them. And our car did not like all that snow. It sounded like a tornado was coming through. I looked in the rearview mirror, and both the guys in the back were like this. I was trying to keep that car straight. Suddenly, I was very grateful for that large swath of land between the two freeways. All right, boundaries. Now, with boundaries comes blessing. And by far, in the book of Psalms and Proverbs, the number one blessing of boundaries is the avoidance of evil. It keeps me from doing something wrong. Proverbs 16:6 says, through love and faithfulness, sin is atoned for. Through the fear of the Lord, a man avoids evil. Through the fear of the Lord, a man avoids evil. And then Proverbs 11:3. The integrity of the upright guides them, but the unfaithful are destroyed by their duplicity. The righteousness of the blameless makes a straight way for them, but the wicked are overthrown by their wickedness. The righteousness of the upright delivers them, but the unfaithful are trapped by evil desires. The fear of the Lord, he says, makes a straight way. You think of these boundaries like this. All across here, it's a straight way. And if I just stay on this road, not a lot of curves, not a lot of unseen things, that's the image he's giving. But the other image is, in that last verse, the unfaithful are trapped by evil desires. What he's describing is something like this. When you and I are up here and we see something on the other side of that boundary that we just have to have, life just won't make any sense without that. Your heart is totally invested in this. You are tempted to the max. You just have to have that, and your mind's working overtime. How can I get what I want over there? What that temptation looks like to you is like a bunny, little bunny rabbit. Isn't that cute? Wouldn't that be so nice to have? What could be so wrong with having a bunny? Surely God would want me to have a bunny. There's nothing wrong with having bunnies. Lots of people have bunnies. But when you get over here and you grab for that bunny, you're going to find that bunny is not really a bunny after all. What you've just grabbed hold of, and what has just grabbed hold of you, is a rattlesnake. When you get over across those boundaries, what Proverbs says is instead of bunnies, you have just put your hand in a trap, in a snare, in a bear trap. Now, it doesn't look like that when you're up here or when you're moving in that direction. But when that rattlesnake bites, it bites hard. And there are some times where that rattlesnake is lethal. And it won't just be lethal for you, but it will be lethal even for people you claim to love. We call them children. You do so at your, not just your peril, but people you claim to love. Second, blessing is wisdom. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. All who follow its precepts have good understanding. To him belongs eternal praise. Life is tough. It's much harder than any of us ever thought it was. And it takes wisdom to try to navigate even when you're within the boundaries. But what you don't want to do is you don't want to be outside the boundaries, because not only do you not have wisdom, but now you have attached blinders to yourself. All you can see is through your own perception and through your own mind and through your own feelings and how things look to you. And the scriptures warn us again and again and again, you do not want to be in that position. That is a foolish approach to life. The third blessing is health and long life. So that you, your children, and their children after them may fear the Lord your God. What did I say? Oh, yes. I thought I'd said something stupid, as usual. So that you, yes, that was a Robert Hood special, by the way. so that you, your children, and their children after them may fear the Lord your God as long as you live by keeping all his decrees and commands that I give you so that you may enjoy long life. The next one is wealth. Now, this is not wealth as Americans think about wealth. This is wealth from God's point of view. You want to be wealthy in the things that are most important. Proverbs 22:4 says, humility and fear of the Lord bring wealth and honor and life. Now, some of you I know are from another church today because you're here to celebrate with Tim and Erica. You think, uh-oh, is this one of those health and wealth churches? No, we are not a health and wealth church. But I will say to you that if you walk in the fear of the Lord, you're going to end up with more stuff than you would have without the fear of the Lord. There's a lot of deals you'll pass up if you walk in the fear of the Lord. Or, for example, how many of you have had a speeding ticket recently? Okay, what do speeding tickets go for? Okay, we need some I think we're all with you on there. We need some specifics. $412. Do I hear $450? Not even close. Oh, $600? $800? Are we in the 800s? Wow. Wow. And the court fees. Oh, yes. Wow, man, we've got a great congregation here today. All right, let's scale this down. How about parking tickets? Anybody had a parking ticket lately? All right, what does a parking ticket go for? $35. Oh, that's pretty tame. But you'd probably rather have that $35 for something else, right? Yeah. Yeah, I've never enjoyed paying a parking ticket, okay? How about a rolling stop, going through the California stop? Anybody had one of those lately? $375. All right, perfect. Yeah, all right. Last year, Mindy and I were in Sacramento moving Brittany into school. I got a blinker out ticket. And I learned a new term. I never heard this, a fix-it ticket. And the officer assured me that if you just go and have this fixed and take it to Irvine PD and have them inspect it and sign it, send it in, all that you'll have to pay is a processing fee, $25. And silly me, I believed her. Now, they sent me a note, and I thought, my error, I thought that was just a, yes, this is what happened. And I just assumed I was going to be getting a bill later on to pay the $25. Ah, contraire. I did get a bill shortly after their due date, and that $25 morphed into $473. The late fee. The late fee. So I looked back, I saw my error, I wrote out a check for $25, I made a copy of their thing, I wrote a letter explaining the situation, my error and what had happened. What a waste of time. About the time the letter arrived in Sacramento, I got a second letter. And this time, there was a letter, a warrant for my arrest. But I could avoid jail time by sending an additional $650. I had fear of the highway patrol walking in here on a Sunday morning and taking, what did he do? I don't know, but it's serious. You know. Just a blinker, just a blinker, just a blinker. Next one is honor. The fear of the Lord teaches a man wisdom, and humility comes before honor. Now, this is one of those things that takes some time to build into your life. But over time, over years, if you determine, I am going to stay within God's boundaries, I am going to treat people rightly, even if it costs me something, and even when it's not convenient, over time, one of the things that's going to accrue to you is a certain amount of honor and respect. You can think of it, there's sort of some substance to this person's life. There's something there, it's almost intangible, but it's something solid. And it's something I want. Well, our word for that is honor. Now, if you, again, watch TV during weekdays, you are not going to get this message. If you watch sitcoms, there is one common thread in virtually every sitcom. Disrespect everybody. Let your mouth just hang loose. All kinds of funny barbs out there, and somehow people just so go along with that. News bulletin. That's not how real life works. You let that kind of disrespect be a pattern in your life, and you're going to be finding, having to find new friends. You're going to be having to find, if you do that in your family growing up, your siblings will gang up on you. That's not how life works. Your particular sitcom of your life may end up looking a whole lot more like a drama. Satisfaction is the next one. The fear of the Lord leads to life. Then one rests content, untouched by trouble. Now, it's not that if I stay within the boundaries, that's a trouble-free life. There's no such thing as a trouble-free life. But it does say that when you're on the stage, your attitude towards trouble is a whole lot different than being down there. Because I know, God, as best I can tell, I'm within your boundaries. I'm doing what you want me to do. And I know, therefore, that whatever trouble challenge I'm having to deal with right now, that you're going to somehow walk me through those in a redemptive way. The way he puts it is, my heart rests content. Or he says, untouched by trouble. It doesn't mean that trouble doesn't come. It just means that there's something between trouble and this Teflon coating that you get to add to your life. Happiness. Better a little with the fear of the Lord than great wealth with turmoil. This week I was watched a little episode of, what was that show? The X show. Simon Cowell. X Factor, is that it? The singing show? So they have 32 contestants who are trying to get the big $5 million contract, and they divided them into four groups, and they sent them to the judge's home to be mentored and to do the next round of tryouts. And so they're all wondering, who is going to be my mentor? Which of the four judges? There's Simon Cowell, and, you know, these other three huge stars. And of course, what they do is they take them to their summer home in Malibu or in Paris or wherever they are around the world, and these luxury estates. And some of these kids, you know, are from the streets. And they're sitting there with eyes about this big, watching this, that someday this could all be mine. The show didn't say anything about the personal lives of the judges. You rarely hear that in Hollywood. The lights are always on the professional lights. Same in the sports world, the world I enjoy reading about. The same in the political world, the world I enjoy reading about. The professional life. Look at the stars. But the personal life. This is what he says here in Proverbs. Better a little with the fear of the Lord than great wealth with turmoil. The opposite of the fear of the Lord, envy. A heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones. In other words, there's something that happens inside of you that just slowly erodes away who you are. Erodes away your joy. Do not let your heart envy sinners, but always be zealous for the fear of the Lord. Second one is being wise in your own eyes. Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and shrewd in their own sight. And what he's describing is woe is like the worst possible thing that can happen to you. That's your future down there. And the way you get there is to be wise in your own eyes. That couldn't be all that bad. And shrewd in your own sight. I know how to avoid. Others have had consequences, but somehow I'll be able to avoid them. I know exactly what to do in order to avoid that consequence and that snake to get right there. That's how a foolish person thinks. Proverbs 26:12 says, "Do you see a man who is wise in his own eyes? There is more hope for a fool than for him." Does anybody know, no names please, and no elbows please, anybody know a fool? You have a face in mind? Probably inwardly shaking your head. You're probably uttering under your breath, "What a fool." What he says here is, that's where you're headed. It may not be at the exact same rattlesnake, but you're headed in the same direction if you're relying on the same thing. Being wise in my own eyes and shrewd in my own sight. On the back of your handout, getting stuff wrongly. Better a little with the fear of the Lord than great wealth with turmoil. That word turmoil means churning inside. A restless conscience, a guilty conscience. What if I get caught? When will I get caught? Rebellion. Fear of the Lord and the king, my son. Do not join with the rebellious, for those two will send sudden destruction upon them, and who knows what calamities they can bring. Now, having been warned that sudden calamities will come if I persist on rebelling against the boundaries, doing what I want to, one of the things you are from here on out never allowed to say is when you get run over by that train, to say, I never saw it coming. Next one. A hardened heart. Blessed is the man who always fears the Lord, but he who hardens his heart falls into trouble. Now, there are some times where we all fall in trouble and we call out to God. But you can persist in going beyond the boundaries over and over and over again to a point where something happens to your heart, what the Bible calls hardening. And when a heart hardens, it will not listen to and respond to the Word of God anymore. It won't respond to somebody like me. It won't respond to a Christian friend or family member in your home. It's just persistent. It's just going to keep on until you get run over by a train. But even then, a heart can be so hard that a heart is still not broken yet. So what does he say here? Look at the next verse. If anyone turns a deaf ear to the law, even his prayers are detestable. In other words, we can get ourselves in such a place with a hard heart that even when we have been bitten by the rattlesnake and we are lying there wondering if we're going to live and we call out to God with that hardened heart, oh God, please do something about my foolishness. What he says here is, that even calling out to God and God doing something then will not be enough to break my heart, to soften my heart. What I need is something else. And that is, I need God to have deaf ears for me to experience and to have to live through what I have insisted on doing. The last one is refusing to listen to the fear of the Lord. Since they hated knowledge and did not choose to fear the Lord, since they would not accept my advice and spurned my rebuke, they will eat the fruit of their ways, and they will be filled with the fruit of their schemes. In the Old Testament, there's a great image of this. The people were out in the middle of the desert, and all they had was manna. Every day, 6 days a week, there's bread to eat, this sort of flaky stuff. And after a while, they said, man, when we were back in Egypt, we had onions and leeks and beets and all kinds of things like that. I hate this manna. And they cried out to God, give us meat. Give us meat. And they did it with a rebellious heart, discontented, a hard heart. And so God did answer their prayers. He sent them quail. But he sent them so much quail that just started to pile up in their camp and to decay and rot. And they ate quail day after day after day. And they got so sick of it, they finally had their hearts changed. That's the image he says here. All right, you persist in going your way. You won't accept my advice, God says. You spurn my rebuke. You insisted you will eat the fruit of your ways. In other words, you sowed this. Now you're going to have to sit down and eat the consequences of it. And the idea here is, be filled with the fruit of their schemes. The idea is, the mental image of that day on Thanksgiving when you've had about too many pieces of pumpkin pie at the end of the day. And you're this fat whale sitting over on the chair in agony, hoping you won't get sick. Hoping that out of your agony, you might actually be able to go to sleep for an hour and wake up better. That's the picture he gives here. I see this probably the most with family life and having to watch your children suffer because of the foolish choices you made about yourself and your spouse. Oh, I love my kids. I would never do anything to harm them. Baloney! This is serious stuff. The fear of the Lord is meant to keep you out of trouble. And not just you, but the people in your life. If you walk out of here today and say, well, that was kind of a somber message. That was good. You know, it gave me a lot to think about. And then just sort of kind of go on your way without really doing some business with God. God, am I over the line? Have I walked over here and just kind of assumed that I can do it? I can get away with it. So far, nothing bad's happened. You got some business to do with God. You do not want God to give pushback in your life. Lance, would you come up and pray for us?